So, how is the character of Mr. Burling presented in the play? Miss Ross has got her money on this question coming up.
I think it's a safe bet.
Yep.
Relatively safe bet.
So, Arthur then. We've got the head of the family. I mean, I don't know if you've listened to the podcast that Miranda and Everton did on Mr. Burling.
Was it good?
No.
Very informative.
Really?
No.
What's the
point? So we're here to correct.
I was going to say, why are we doing it then?
Yeah.
Thanks, fellas.
That yeah, we're here to good. Just make a useful and factually accurate podcast.
Cover some of the points they may have missed.
Yeah.
Let's be diplomatic.
One of the things they did get, though, is that he is a hard man or a hard-headed businessman, I think is the quote.
I think that's what they were looking for, yeah.
Yes.
I think he says that himself.
He does.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he is business driven. He is the capitalist, alpha male, thinks he knows everything about the world. He starts off the play is very, very Arthur driven at the start.
Arthur-centric.
Yes, Arthur-centric at the start. We have him talking to the boys about responsibility, which is extremely ironic, given that he, you know, misuses his responsibility and doesn't accept responsibility later on.
It becomes quite clear that he just wants a platform almost to preach from, because he doesn't talk so much as lectures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not looking for a response. He just wants to
tell them everything he knows. Yeah. And actually what he knows is very little, because we see from the multiple instances of dramatic irony where he talks about things with absolute confidence in something that the audience watching it know to be false. Mm. So the Titanic being unsinkable, for example, the Germans don't want a war. These are some prime examples that have to go in any essay on Mr. Burling, because they, as I've said on numerous podcasts, show him to be a bit of a plonker.
Well, they're fundamental into undermining him for the rest of the play.
Yeah.
So that as a result of that speech in Act One, as the audience, we do not trust a word he says.
Yeah.
And more than don't trust, feel him that he is foolish.
Yes, he's someone to ridicule.
Yeah.
And therefore the actions he takes we're never going to agree with. So we talked in the Eva Smith podcast how that means that we then tend to be on her side. And the same goes when we see his relationships with his family. We're more on the side of Eric.
Yeah, yeah.
We're in this sort of father-son battle that's also going on.
Yeah.
So what do we know about him then? We know that he is...
What's significant about his name?
I don't know, Mr. Shirley. Why don't
tell
you
tell us? Tell us what's significant
about
him.
Well, I don't know. I just have two stupid ideas, but I don't know if they're any good.
As long as it's nothing to do with Macbeth or Jekyll and Hyde, they're all welcome here.
Well, as in Jekyll and Hyde, no. could you link his name to British tradition and values that Priestley might be trying to question? If his name is linked to, like, King Arthur.
Yeah.
And that the idea that he's
the
linked
traditional
to traditional way of doing things, the
stoic,
traditional values.
Yeah.
And then the also, actually, Arthur means king. So he does try to assert himself as the... like.
Oh, I like that.
It means bear king, but...
Whatever.
It means
you
king.
Just not quit while you're ahead.
Not as in he is bear king.
Bear as in the animal.
I thought you meant bear as in, like, naked king.
No,
that's a different place.
So I like that. I like Arthur, the significance of the, you know, old English. And he certainly
is also
outdated, isn't he?
It's also a little bit ironic, because King Arthur was hugely respected.
And he
had his nice round table.
Slayed the dragon that is, like, representative of the evils.
Oh, God. Here we go.
So I wouldn't
and he
go.
He doesn't do that.
I wouldn't go too far into that. If you're going to look at his name, make a basic link to the idea of King Arthur and comment on how it's ironic, because King Arthur stands for all that it is good to be British or English, as it was,
and virtue,
and pride and honour and all that sort of thing. Whereas Mr. Burling kind of stands in opposition to that. And again, he's made to be a foolish character, greedy, egocentric.
Yeah.
He's this idea of that we hear quite a lot now, toxic masculinity. The idea that to be a man, you have to be this chest-beating, dominant alpha male that sidelines and subjugates women.
I was
going
to say, you could talk
inferior
about,
classes.
You could talk about the way patriarchy has been corrupted almost, that it used to be being a man as being chivalrous and noble and virtuous.
Yeah,
chivalrous?
And then now...
Chivalrous.
Now being a man is, you know, objectifying in a way that like Eric and Gerald sort of do.
Yeah.
And that idea of toxic masculinity is passed. He's almost preaching that to them at the start of the play.
Which is the exact opposite of what Priestley wants.
Absolutely.
He doesn't want the audience leaving this feeling like, I need to be a man's man.
Mm.
He wants the audience actually to stop being like Mr. Burling, to make sure they don't go back to this way of thinking after the war, because the war very much unified Britain. It gave respect to women who were doing the jobs that men were doing, that nobody would have believed a woman with her dainty little hands would be able to work in a factory. And so he doesn't want this. He doesn't want people going back to that way of thinking. What else do we know about Mr. Burling? We know that he is pompous. We know that he is driven by reputation.
I also think that going back to his reputation...
Sorry, Mr. Shirley doesn't get a word in.
I think that going back to... Because Mr. Burling is one of my favourite characters, because of the antagonism that he has, when you look at the stage directions, he's described as...
Pretentious,
but he's also described as having a bit of an accent.
Yeah.
Which is hugely significant. And it may seem irrelevant, but it's hugely significant because Mr. Burling desires to be part of the ruling class along with the Crofts.
Yeah.
Which is what Sheila's marriage to Gerald is basically all about. It's not about love, it's about him being related to the Crofts. But the fact that he is still, I can't remember what the phrase is, it's not parochial in his speech.
Provincial. Because it's like he's not from that
class. He's not
class.
From money.
Anybody's
yeah.
trying to sound like it. It's like when you watch reality shows where there's people that are trying to be like the Kardashians.
And if
it's just tragic.
And if he will never, and the point there is that he will never fit in with the Crofts.
Or his wife, actually, as well, is superior to him in terms of...
Well, she is his social superior.
She is his social superior. And so he... And we see elements of his kind of... where it becomes obvious is when he's like, thank Cook for me, because he's trying to brag, to remind the audience.
Which is the port, isn't it? I believe it's the same kind your father gets.
Yeah, it's just this kind of, I want to be part of this club.
Yeah.
And listen to how many people I know. It's like, how irritating when people name drop and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, excellent.
Well, I think that's stuff about the knighthood as well.
It's kind of the way he's like, almost like a sad figure, as much as we dislike him.
Yeah.
It's like, he's been corrupted by capitalism, especially, into believing those things are worth chasing.
Yeah.
And
he's
like,
lost sight of what matters.
That corruption by capitalism forced him to be evil and hateable because of what he does to Eva. But at the same time, I think, I talked about it in the other one where he says he'll give thousands at the end, is the idea that, you know, he is a good person, he's just corrupted by society.
Yeah, which is
he does try to fix it, but because society has ruined him, he only thinks in money.
But also, I think you've got to... Oh, Mr. Shirley's off. Bye, Mr. Shirley.
I'm listening.
Teach. No. I also think it's significant that he's very relieved at the end when he believes that it's a hoax.
Yeah.
And which shows that he hasn't made the same amount of personal growth as the other characters. Even if he does say that he'll pay thousands, it's more to save his reputation.
Yeah, that is his driving force.
Then, oh my gosh, I should never have sacked this girl.
Yeah.
It's, absolutely. Oh, there's consequences to my actions.
Mm.
Now I need to reconsider it. Which I think is an important distinction.
But I think you can talk about both.
You need to go and teach.
I know.
Bye. Meow. So how else then, what else do we see about him other than what we've talked about so far?
Well, we talked in previous podcast about the only thing that truly angers him is when he finds out that Eric has stolen his money, which is obviously his driving force. That's his reason for being, is to make money. So when he finds out that Eric has been stealing from him, that's the thing that outrages him more than the fact that Eric kind of admits to having raped Eva Smith.
Yeah.
More than the fact that his future son-in-law admits to having cheated on his daughter. These things don't bother him as much.
There's no way. He still wants that marriage to go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, again, that gives us an insight into his motivation, his driving factor, is still about social progress and money.
Yeah, and I think the character of Mr. Burling is basically there to epitomise what Priestley doesn't want. Mm,
yeah.
The kind of person that you are supposed to reject. So he's very useful as a tool to bounce off Priestley's ideas.
Would you say that Priestley presents him as beyond redemption? That he's so invested in this capitalist ideal that he can never be saved.
I don't hate him as much as his wife.
No.
He doesn't have the same level of pride, I don't think.
I almost feel like he's been sold a lie, and that
stupid.
Yeah, if we look at
he's just stupid.
If we look at him through a modern audience's eyes. Actually, he's done very well for himself to come from a very working class Midlands family to build up his own industrial empire.
Yeah,
where he is rubbing shoulders with and being the possibility of knighthoods. He's done incredibly well, but it's still not enough for him.
Yeah,
he wants to be part of that upper echelon.
He needs to change his motivations for him to have any sort of redemption. He needs to value, you know, his family and, you know, the relationship with his son, I think, sums it up. You know, the only time he really is interested in Eric is in how Eric is going to take over the family business, what sort of a man he's going to be. But that man isn't about, is he kind? Is he caring?
Yeah.
Is he going to show us up? Is he going to, you know, the same way he uses his daughter as a tool for social growth and, you know, to form this unity with the Crofts. He talks about how Gerald is, you know, the kind of son, I can't remember exactly, the exact man, like the perfect son-in-law, essentially.
Yeah, and I think his focus is that he wants to avoid...
Okay, we just had to pause that, so we've sort of forgotten what we were saying. But Arthur, bit of a plonker, capitalism... What else?
I think, so at the end... Oh, that's right. So we're talking about how Gerald is his idea of a perfect son.
Yes.
Largely, probably because he represents that social class that he aspires to become.
Yeah.
And he's constantly showing off to Gerald. The fact that the phrase public scandal is what Arthur keeps repeating about avoiding public scandal, or this will cause a public scandal, shows... his fascination and with the image created by his family. So
reputation is everything for
it
him.
It is, yeah, absolutely. And the fact that he keeps on talking about his knighthood and, as we said,
he
the titles.
Lord
Mayor. All of these immaterial things that in reality don't matter. And somebody as moral and reliable as the inspector, for example...
Once again, Year 11s, I had to pause it there, so I've sort of lost my train of thought. But hopefully this podcast has given you a bit of an overview about how Mr. Burling is presented in the play. Okay? Go off and do your own revision. Good luck.